Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of Roman innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Peter Giangreco, Republican Dan Proft, author Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming to my home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our telephone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. If it's Sunday, it's Meet the Press. And with those seven words for the last 17 years, Tim Russert defined political talk in discussion in this country and set the agenda for the week that would follow. Like David Brinkley a generation earlier, Tim Russert used his strong personality to reshape Sunday Beltway discussion, and in doing so, set a standard for preparation, fairness, and toughness that no one can match. Last Friday, the definer of political debate was suddenly gone, and it set in motion scores of accolades from pundits around the country who have filled the air with praise for this son of Buffalo, who rose from his position as political junkie extraordinaire to the country's premier political talkmeister. Tonight, we invite those listening beyond the Beltway, our voices, to share their thoughts and opinion about this remarkable journalist, remarkable man, and one who left a campaign at a time when just the very mention of the campaign would bring a smile and a twinkle in his Irish face. He loved covering politics more than anyone else on television. It showed. He will be missed. Joining us this evening is Pete Giangreco. Pete is our Democrat tonight. Pete, also a native of Buffalo, New York. What did Tim Russert mean to Buffalo?
I tell you, he was a point of civic pride. He was a treasure for the city. For those of us who are from Buffalo, and especially those of us who went to Canisius High School, I mean, when you talked about Tim Russert to other people, he said, you know, he's from Buffalo. He went to my high school. He was ours. And I'm interested in how the tributes, they seem to go along the same lines. Here was this guy who was an interviewer of presidents and popes, but never forgot where he came from. Well, we know where he came from. He came from South Buffalo, and that was a huge point of pride. And you see around the city this weekend, the flags are at half-mast. Every Catholic church in the Diocese of Buffalo, he was remembered in. And my favorite, they're going to rename Route 20 outside of Ralph Wilson Stadium after him and his beloved Buffalo Bills played. So he meant a lot to everybody, whether you knew him personally or not, because he was one of those guys who you felt like you knew. You know, he came into your home every Sunday, and he was not one of these sort of, you know, pompous or arrogant or put on airs. He was a regular guy, and you felt that whether you'd met him 100 times or never met him at all.
Dan Proft joins us tonight. He is our conservative Republican. And Dan, we've spent many nights in the history of this program sort of talking about an inside the Beltway mentality. But to me, Tim Russert was different. He did not, although he was the consummate D.C. insider, it seems to me that in his interrogation and his general persona, he was about as straight as you could get.
Yeah, no, I mean, I loved his show. I started watching Meet the Press when I was in college, and he was one of those guys that was affable and tenacious. Unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to meet him. But I think today in the tribute that they did that Tom Brokaw hosted, I thought there were some interesting points that were made. One was that he had kind of an institutional knowledge, and he kind of changed the way that I think some political journalists at least aspire to cover politics in terms of making political figures, especially those running for high office, answer to what they've said before, what they've done before, not just kind of living in the moment, but having some context and some institutional knowledge around what people have said and done previous to kind of bursting onto the national scene. So I thought that was really interesting. And the other thing that Brokaw mentioned specifically was, and I think people overlooked, was, I mean, this was a very, very shrewd guy, very sharp guy. He was an attorney. I don't think most people knew that. And I think that kind of his intellectual curiosity curiosity and the intellectual rigor that he brought to the show, I think made it enjoyable for people on both sides of the aisle.
Carol Felsenthal also joins us. She is author of a new book called Clinton in Exile. And you, in addition to your writing, you're a dogged researcher of your topic. What can you say, as a journalist, analyzing another journalist, what can you say about Tim Russert?
Well, he was as impressive as can be. And I thought, you know, the just to add a little bit of objectivity here, because I'm a big fan of Tim Russert, and I like him better than any of the other Sunday morning people, and I watched him, you know, almost every week. I was always impressed at his doggedness. I know the Clintons were very angry at him, both Bill and Hillary, because of his questioning at one of the debates when he kept probing and probing her answer about driver's licenses illegals. And
that was one of the first times in the debate where she was back on her heels.
Yeah. That's right. That was when the armor of inevitability developed a crack. And once that cracked, then it was the trajectory of the race changed. And I know that Bill Clinton, in particular, felt that Russert let Obama go on that question, and he just kept digging into Hillary Clinton and digging. Also, when he had the round tables, that's when he became a Washington insider. I thought it was interesting the way he always had James Carville on, right. And I think of Carville as being kind of a carnival barker. He's entertaining, but I don't think his political analysis is much good because he's so hyper-partisan. And his wife, Mary, and help me with her last name, the two of them, and then he liked to have Doris Kearns Goodwin on, and I got a big laugh when Obama was accused of plagiarism. Do you remember that during the race for the nomination? Plagiarizing a speech, which I thought was a ridiculous charge
so
against
was
him.
She.
But the person he had on was Doris Kearns Goodwin, who had her own plagiarism scandal, and he was kind, you know, he didn't put the question to her in particular, but she was another one of the insiders.
It's interesting that you draw the difference, because it is. He was the insider on the round table, and yet when he was interrogating the prime guest for the week, even though I knew that his background came out of Democratic politics, I mean, I couldn't tell, and I was always looking for that. I didn't see that.
Well, I think Carol makes an interesting point here too, which is if you view the race in 2008 as the rise and fall of Hillary Clinton. The bookends of that would be the Philadelphia debate, where Tim Russert did ask those questions, and the final word on the race probably was the first Tuesday in May, when somewhere around midnight,
right,
Tim Russert said this race is over with, and it changed all of the other journalist's point of view. It was sort of like, well, if Russert says it's over, it's over.
And my sources told me that Bill Clinton was beyond apoplectic.
It was true. So he wasn't just a reporter of news. He was a shaper of news.
Right. Yes,
what happened on Meet the Press on Sunday generally set the tone for at least the first half of the week.
And he was right about that.
And a lot of times he was. And so
question about it. He set the standard. 1-800-723-8288. And if you have a comment about Tim Russert, we're going to be talking about other issues as well. But 1-800-723-8288. I'm Bruce Dumont from Beyond the Beltway.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
Bruce Dumont back, and we're talking about Tim Russert, and we're talking about Pete make the comment about how you heard the news.
I walked into the Obama headquarters, and the first person I ran into was David Axelrod, who was sort of speaking on his cell phone, hushed, and he grabbed me, and he said, I didn't quite catch what he said, something about Russert died, and I thought he was talking about his dad. And he said, no, Tim. And the two of them have gotten to be, you know, close over the years. And it was amazing as the word spread through the office. I mean, here's a campaign office with lots going on. And, you know, it cast a pall over it. People stopped. They were clustered around TVs and on the phone. Did you hear? Everything kind of stopped. And it's amazing that a journalist would have that impact on a campaign office.
Yeah, or just regular people. I was just saying when we were on break that, I was getting calls and just people that, friends that aren't even political, but I mean, that knew of him, just liked him, that had seen him either on like election night coverage, you know, the times they actually tune in to what's going on politically and stuff. So, I mean, it really was, he was one of those guys that, you know, of course the replacement talk is going to start now, but he's not going to be replaceable because he was a personality in addition to a journalist.
You know, he didn't, I watch both the ABC this week and Meet the Press on Sundays usually, and you look at George Stephanopoulos, and he has the $400 haircut, right? And his clothes are perfect.
That's $400, that haircut?
I don't know. I think it's perfect. He looks, his grooming is impeccable. And then you'd see Tim Russert, he always reminded me a little of my dad. You know, the hair was never quite right. It was always like sticking out at an odd angle.
It wasn't GQ.
No, not at all. And he was I thought that he was very bulky. And I wondered about him because sometimes, you know, he'd be like really red in the face. And he was just a big guy. And the sad thing for me as a mother of three was the proximity to Father's Day and the one son, the son Luke, who we talked about, who just graduated from Boston College.
All the time.
And, you know, you saw them. There was a great photo of the two of them together at a Wizards game, I think, with their thumbs up, and he looks like him. And it's heartbreaking. On the other hand, one of the interesting things about Luke Russert, the BC graduate, a 22-year-old, is he's got a radio sports show with James Carville.
Mm-hmm.
It's I you know, he's had it for at least a year. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe Luke Russert one of these days will be sitting in that.
Well, that's a tough chair, and I think that, you know, in broadcasting, literally within seconds of things like this that happen, there's a darkness that pops into a lot of newsrooms. I don't know whether people were thinking instantly about who the replacement will be for Meet the Press, but as I was saying to Pete, to me it's a tough act to follow in that there was Tim Russert, the interrogator on Meet the Press, who I think is an irreplaceable role that he played there. Then there's the Tim Russert one-on-one interview, which he does with his cable show. He does a good job there. And then there's the job of sitting next to Brian Williams on election night. And that I think, is a very tough role. I think that Chuck Todd is one of the young up-and-comers at NBC. I think there's some of those roles that I think that Chuck Todd might play. But it's going to be an extremely tough act to follow come Sunday morning, following in the wake of the preparation and the grilling that is associated with Meet the Press and Tim Russert.
I want to pick up on a point that Carol made about you know, Father's Day. You know, here's a guy who could have written a book, you know, could have written the newsman's memoirs, and it probably would have been one of the better ones out there, and who had a pretty extraordinary life. He chose to write about, you know, his dad and growing up in South Buffalo and what it meant to be a son, to be a father, and provoked such an outpouring of, that's just like my dad, you know, that everybody emailed in. And then there was the second book then, Wisdoms from My Father, which was basically a collection of reactions of how he struck a nerve there. I mean, it's a guy who kind of had it all in perspective about, you know, the importance of fatherhood, the importance of family, and the joy of eating a Salem's hot dog with Weber's mustard, which if you're from Buffalo, you get that.
You know what that means.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that Tim Russert would want us to do, and he would want his colleagues back in D.C. to do, and that is to get back to the business of talking politics and talking about what we love. And as I said in my opening remarks tonight, there was an infectiousness about Tim Russert. I mean, this is a guy who loved his job. He loved to live every minute of it. And he was, in fact, in recent weeks at the end of whether it was the Tuesday night broadcast or whether it was the most recent version of Meet the Press, he was so excited at the end of those discussions because he knew that he had a tiger by the tail, and that is this race for President of the United States. And so what I'd like to do is kind of shift gears. Again, I think we've made our comments about Tim Russert. I think they're from the heart. I think you've probably gleaned that from some of the conversations that you've been privy to over the last several days on both radio and television in America. This was a unique member of the journalistic community, and one that I think even those who are critical of the profession itself, I think there's probably very little criticism that is rightfully due to Tim Russert as we analyze the remarkable career. But now, who's going to be the running mate? This is what he'd want to know.
Right.
Who is going to be the running mate at the moment? Let's talk. We've talked a lot about, obviously, the Democrats. Let's talk a little bit about some of the challenges of the Republicans, and let's put it in context with at least what Karl Rove is saying. Karl Rove sees this as a very competitive race. Do you see this as a competitive race at the moment?
Oh, I think it's very, very competitive. I mean, it's most of the polling right now in the key swing states has it within the margin of error.
Obama's to lose, in your view?
I actually think it's McCain's to lose. I really do believe that. I know that's kind of an odd thing to say in this year with what it's looking like it's going to be for Republicans, but I do believe it's McCain's to lose. And one of the indicators of that is the closeness of the race right now. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that McCain is running 10 to 12 to 15 points ahead against the ahead of the generic ballot test, Republican versus Democrat. So I think the American people have one impression maybe of the Republican Party and that brand right now, and a completely different impression of John McCain to his advantage.
Pete, do you think it's a runaway?
No. I mean, this is going to be a competitive race. I think that it's true that I think people have decided to take out their anger on where the Republicans and Bush have led us for the last eight years on the congressional ballot test and saying, absolutely, I'm not going to vote for a Republican for Congress.
But they're not going to take it on
McCain? I think presidential elections work a different way. I think it's very much a personal, you're voting for, leader of the free world, the only person who really stands up and represents all of America, not just this state or that party. And so I think it's a different calculation when people look at it. I think in the end, the one thing that's probably going to drive this thing that is to Obama's advantage and not McCain is that after 8 years of a failed war in Iraq and a horrible economy, that people really want change. They look at John McCain and they just don't see that. And they look at Barack Obama and they say, this is the kind of change we need. So I think that basic dynamic, and there's things to like about Obama, and there's things I like about John McCain, even as a, dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. And these are guys who both have the ability to poach on the other party's turf. These are not guys, frankly, unlike Kerry and Bush, who didn't have that advantage and had a very close race, but it was a race where lesser of two evils, I think. Whereas I think this election, people are really going to have a tougher choice.
Older. Last week when you were on this program, we talked about that one of the key demographics is going to be older women. It looks like at least some of the polls this week suggest that some of the older women are going back to the Democratic Party in the wake of Hillary's speech last Saturday.
And some of them, anecdotally at least, look like they might go to John McCain. What surprised me about the poll numbers out this week was that Obama didn't have a bigger bounce from his victory. And that we're talking, about a 5-6 point spread between the two of them, basically at this time, if the polls mean anything. And, I look at the VP selection and wonder how much it really even matters. I think Hillary is now the only possibility of Hillary being Barack Obama's choice, I think, is if the Clintons have something really big and juicy, and there's almost a situation that resembles a kind of a blackmail. Otherwise, I can't imagine how he could possibly make the selection of Hillary Clinton. But I'm just not so sure that those second spots on the ticket even matter very much.
Do they, in your view?
I mean, I historically, I think the evidence is that they have rarely mattered in the last 50 years. I mean, we know that John Edwards didn't even carry his home county, carry in Edwards, much less North Carolina. We know,
or South Carolina.
Right. Geraldine Ferraro lost her congressional district in 1984 against Reagan. I mean, and the Republican side, too. But I think that, so I think that in one respect, has the potential to matter for, like, if Barack Obama was to choose Hillary Clinton, which I agree would be a tragic mistake because I think it would distract away from what his campaign has been about to this point. Mm-hmm. So if you make a selection that's a distraction, I think it could have a negative impact. I think McCain needs to select somebody, though, that could have an impact in terms of shoring up that conservative base, particularly motivating evangelicals to not sit on their hands, to come out and vote. So I think even though there's, I think, more focus on Obama's choice right now, I think McCain's is more important.
I think that's true. I mean, I think that one of the built-in advantages that Obama does have, and it's you can't measure this very well in polling, is what you think turnout might be. You know, in 2004, you talk to all these Democratic operatives and say, gee, we lost Ohio even though we made our vote goals. Well, it's because the other side made their vote goals and then some. There were lines. I remember one guy saying to me when I called Ohio, how we doing? And they said, there are lines where there shouldn't be lines.
Oh, no.
And I'll never forget that. I don't think that John McCain, I agree with Dan here, is going to inspire that kind of turnout. I don't think there are going to be lines where there shouldn't be lines. And on the other hand, there are going to be lines out the door for where, from the Democratic perspective, there should be. Young people, inner cities, suburbs, I think we're going to do very well in those areas, and the turnout will be the wild card in it.
Phone lines open, 1-800-723-8029. Veep Talk from Chicago when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Lincoln, Nebraska to Lincolnwood, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Our Democrat tonight is Pete Giangreco. He is a partner in the Strategy Group, one of the leading Democratic media companies in the United States. Dan Proft also joins us. He is a longtime Republican political operative, and he's also a commentator on WLS Radio with Don Wade and Roma. And Carol Felsenthal also joins us, one of the country's leading freelance writers, and her new book is called Clinton in Exile, A President Out of Office. It's about the antics of Bill Clinton, and you've been on the show a number of times over the last several weeks, and you think that what's in that book should eliminate Bill Clinton as the husband to the perhaps Democratic running mate for Barack Obama.
Well, I think that every time that Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail for the nomination said she was the most vetted candidate in the race, I laughed to myself, because not only are there shopping bags full of stuff about Hillary Clinton, but Bill Clinton is beyond a problem for the Democratic Party and for the chances to win this election. It's such a good time for the Democrats to bring Bill Clinton with his heavy baggage in. It doesn't make sense, and there's a lot of it. And my book, by the way, is much more than about Bill Clinton's antics. There's also so many good things that he's done in his post-presidency, particularly his work in Africa. And I spent an awful lot of time looking at that and interviewing physicians and experts on HIV/AIDS and his bringing down the cost of antiretroviral drugs, and especially in the pediatric realm. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. So he has the ability to do these great things, but I think that he would be slaughtered and she would be slaughtered were she to be on a national ticket.
Pete, you mentioned that you've got some inside track with a lot of people in the Obama campaign. Is there much serious talk of Hillary as a running mate?
Well, I mean, I think the old adage holds true, which is anyone who's talking that they know about the VP doesn't know, and anybody who knows isn't talking. So there's idle chatter around the water cooler, but I wouldn't chalk it up to much more than that. Look, Senator Clinton, ran a magnificent race, was historic in her own right. And I think whether she's on the ticket or not is going to be an asset for Obama, who will campaign all over the country wherever she's needed. And I think that that's going to be a real asset. I think that she, particularly towards the end, really found her voice, where early on it was sort of a cacophony. She sort of kind of figured out who she was and what she stood for, and it really resonated with people.
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Joe in Schaumburg, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Bruce. Hi, panel. A couple of running mates for Barack Obama, which I like. But first of all, the big buzz around Washington, Jim Webb. Now, the thing is with Jim Webb, I heard 30 years ago he made some disparaging remarks about females. I'm worried that that might hurt him. But if you look at the guy, he's a Vietnam veteran, a decorated war hero. Could he bring Virginia in for Obama? I don't know. I don't know, because a lot of people say that he's, what's the word I'm looking for, kind of boring, that he's not a good campaigner.
Let's let everybody respond. We'll
and
start
Joe
with
Biden's
Dan.
My other choice, too.
Go ahead.
I think Jim Webb is anything but boring.
no, I like him.
Character.
I just heard that. I like him.
Yeah, no, I actually kind of like him, too, frankly. But
he's a Republican.
Yeah, that helps.
But he could be over crossover Republicans.
But no, I think Webb has been treated a little bit unfairly, not surprisingly, from the left. His comments that you refer to disparaging.
30 years ago, right.
Well, they were disparaging. They weren't disparaging against women. He took a position where about women in combat, and he said some things that he later kind of recharacterized. But he wasn't attacking women. I think he's a really interesting choice, but I also think that some of the novels that he's written and things like that bring up some problems. I think he's a very bright.
I didn't know that.
I think he's a very bright guy, and I think he does bring that kind of military gravitas to the ticket. But I think some of these other things in his background would be distractions.
Cheryl?
He also has a bad temper. He's not easily controlled. I don't think he would take direction well. He is. Over the years has shown a certain nostalgia for the Confederacy, which would be a problem in a race. Whatever he means by that, fair or unfair, that's his heritage, but he has said it. And he made some comment about women in the military being in a position to that every horny, it's every horny woman's dream, something like that. And those, he's there, there are so many comments like that. And also the fact that he was in the Reagan administration, which might be a plus or a minus.
Well, I think that would be a plus. Mm-hmm. But you talked about Virginia. I think Virginia's in play whether Webb's right on the ticket or not. I mean, this is a state that's changed. Demographics have changed. Much more of the vote comes from northern Virginia now. You've had a succession now of Warner, Kane, Webb, who've won there because it is a place that's become much more moderate over the years, and Obama has great appeal there.
And Mark Warner has taken himself out of the
Why?
Well, I mean, he's running for the Senate. I don't know if Virginia has one of those Lloyd Benson laws where you can run for both, but I think he's just decided that he's cast. He, frankly, early on, because Mark Warner's an old client of mine, and my nephew is his writes all his correspondence, was my pick. So very clearly, my pick doesn't have much pull in Obama land or Warner land, but I think Mark Warner would have been a great one. But I think, look, Virginia's in play either way. I think we're in great position to not only appeal to the growing suburban vote in northern Virginia, but also appeal to the base vote in Richmond and Norfolk. It's really a state that's in play.
How serious is Kathleen Sebelius, the governor of Kansas, has been, her name is on every short list, allegedly,
right,
as is Bobby Jindal in Louisiana, and I don't buy that either. But is she there just because she's a woman? I mean, is she the most qualified woman in the United States to be a heartbeat away?
No, she's got a great story to tell, though. I mean, here is a twice-elected Democrat in a very, very red state.
Right.
Certainly plays into the Obama narrative about bringing people together and getting things done. She fits that to a T. She also highlights, you know, this is where Barack's grandparents were born, where his mother was raised. So the whole Dunham family story coming from Kansas amplifies that. She's a fresh face. So all of this
and
works.
Is it her father-in-law?
Her father was Governor Gilligan, who was Republican governor of Ohio.
Right.
So she very, very clearly fits the we are not red states, we are not blue states, we are the United States kind of message of the Obama campaign.
But I hear a lot as I go about my reporting about a rule unwritten and mostly unstated that a woman cannot be have the second spot on the Democratic ticket because that would further antagonize the women who were so strongly and staunchly Hillary supporters, that it would somehow be disrespectful of Hillary were there to be a woman. It sounds ridiculous, but it is out there.
Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of feel like I'm flacking for the Democrats here, but I really actually don't buy that argument about if you picked Sebelius or if you picked Claire McCaskill that would somehow create such resentment among Hillary voters, because I don't think that a lot of those voters were necessarily so tied to Hillary herself as they were to, number one, maybe an uneasiness about Obama, just like a lot of Obama voters had an uneasiness about Hillary, and you know, for a variety of other reasons that have nothing to do with Hillary Clinton, the person, and more just a rejection of or just kind of a she was the tallest midget in that primary, frankly.
Let's go to Kevin listening to us in Ryan, Ohio on WoWo. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you, folks?
Okay.
I appreciate you taking my call. My comment is, as a voter, I'm a little confused to who to vote for because I see both of these candidates, Obama and McCain, as being so nondescript. The only thing I can really identify either one of them with is, okay, we're going to stay in Iraq or we're getting out of Iraq, or we're going to change or we're not going to change. And I guess I'm trying to get a handle on what is it these guys are really running on.
Well, I think this is a pretty good rule of thumb, for lack of a better phrase for it, which is if you like the way things are, you should vote for McCain, because he's pretty much said – He used to oppose the Bush tax cuts for the very rich. Now he's embraced them. He wants 5 more years of combat in Iraq. He wants to keep same trade policies without even taking a look at even thinking about renegotiating, which is some people have won under those agreements. Some people have lost. A lot of people in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania said we've lost. So if you like the Bush policies and if you like 5 more years of combat in Iraq, you should vote for McCain. If you want change, you should vote for Obama. I think it's hard to argue that it's anything I said isn't true.
It's actually very easy to argue. With a differing view.
It's actually very easy to argue. And the most overused and empty word in politics, not just this election cycle, but always, it's just on steroids in this election cycle, is change. Change is inevitable. It does not need an agent. Change will occur. So the question is, what kind of change? And Pete actually outlined a lot of issues where there are, unlike in the Democratic primary, where there are clear contrasts between the two candidates, and the American people will have a choice in terms of what they want to do in Iraq, if there is going to be a cogent strategy or if there's going to be a Barack Obama strategy, which is it changes every 24 hours depending on are we going to stay, are we not going to stay, what's going to happen if the chaos ensues, if we pulled all the troops out tomorrow. He introduces a resolution to get all the troops out of Iraq by March of 2008, March of 2009, and then in a debate in the Democratic primary says, I'm not going to commit to having all the troops out of Iraq by the end of my first term. This is a guy speaking out of both sides of his mouth on this issue, as well as so many others that Pete just ticked off, because all he is offering when you get past the cadence and past the presentation and to the substance is rehashed, hash, great society, big government programs that we've heard about for 40 years from George McGovern and Jimmy Carter. John McCain has it right. If I'm supposed to be the third term of George Bush, then he is proposing the second term of Jimmy Carter.
Actually, what I think one of the biggest differences that's very clear, where Obama is not only different from McCain, but different from presidents past. He's talking about a $1,000 tax cut for middle-class families. John McCain's not for that. John McCain's for keeping the tax cuts at the top and actually giving more corporate tax cuts, like Exxon and Mobil need more. Another difference is he wants to take, if you're a senior and you make $50,000 or less, you'll pay no taxes under Obama. That's different from old Democratic orthodoxy. It's different from Bush and McCain. So there's a real difference.
Got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. More calls when we come back to Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
We'll be right back. From Syracuse, New York to Hollywood, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. We're talking about possible running mates for each of the campaigns. I want to very quickly go through a list. And if I mention a name that you want to say something about, either dead bang loser or interesting choice, I'll let whoever wants to jump in can jump in. We've already talked about Hillary Clinton and Jim Webb. And we mentioned that Mark Warner from Virginia has taken himself out. John Edwards took himself out, but he was just ahead of the curve, right?
Right.
Because everybody else had already taken him out.
And the governor of Ohio, who was a strong Hillary supporter, he also took, he issued a statement that didn't leave any loophole, it sounded
right.
like.
And so he would not out. Have been, based on what I've talked about. Right. What about Claire McCaskill's name came up from Missouri, Bill Richardson of New Mexico, Joe Biden?
Not Bill Richardson. I think Bill Richardson has too many problems, and they're both personal.
Help himself during the campaign.
Yeah, no. That's exactly. I think.
What about Joe Biden? Joe Biden, his name is allegedly on a short list. You've known Biden for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Joe Biden is a guy who gives a great speech, who has impeccable foreign policy credentials, and has the guts to stand up and just really told the president exactly what needed to be told after that Knesset speech, which was ridiculous. But therein lies Joe Biden's problem, too. He said exactly the right thing, probably exactly the wrong way. And so I don't know. I mean, I think Joe Biden's a great pick. He would be, it might be a little white knuckle time wondering what he might say from time to time. But he
doesn't obviously bring you anything other than he is also a consummate D.C. insider, not exactly someone
he's
you think
older.
Of a change.
He's a generation older than Obama. I think he's 65 years old. Mm-hmm. He has baggage. I mean, I remember personally, and I've since gone back and done the research and reporting on it, you know, he had the plagiarism scandal in 1988.
Right.
He also fudged on his resume. He moved himself up in his law school class. So I don't know, Joe Biden, and he's kind of, I think he's got the foreign policy expertise. He could be Secretary of State, but he's also an awfully big windbag.
Sam Nunn, does anybody take him as a serious candidate? Isn't he
too
old?
Far removed.
Boring.
Old.
Yeah. Tom Daschle didn't help himself on primary day when he couldn't carry his home state for
Barack Obama. I don't think that stuff matters. I mean,
you don't think,
but his
no.
wife,
it's a close
Tom
primary.
Daschle's wife is a problem because she's a lobbyist, and I think she would be a problem.
Ed Randell of Pennsylvania,
Jewish. I think
does that help or hurt?
I think it hurts when he's running with an African American. I think it would hurt. I think it would hurt. I think Ed Randell is a terrific politician. I love watching
him. Will he lock
him.
In Pennsylvania? Or you think you're going to have Pennsylvania?
Oh, I think we're going to do fine in Pennsylvania. Although the one place that I think McCain could really make Pennsylvania a fight is if he named Tom Ridge.
Tom Ridge.
I think not just does the Pennsylvania thing, really amplifies. I mean, here's a guy who was a Marine, amplifies a lot of that as a pretty
pro-choice.
Solid guy. But he is Catholic. But he is pro-choice, and so probably doesn't. Is a non-starter probably in that party.
Yeah, I don't think Tom Ridge.
For that reason?
Yeah, for that. And also, too, I mean, it still harkens back to the Bush administration.
Well, just about every Republican will. I mean,
Evan Bayh?
They were all Evan,
And Indiana was not a big win. Chris Dodd has a problem with mortgages from Countrywide, which came out over the weekend.
Wesley Clark?
No. Bad choice, I think. I think he was a stalking horse in 2004.
Here's my one with a little buffo behind it. Chuck Hagel.
Yeah, that's.
I think Chuck Hagel is
which
a wild choice.
Which party?
No, Chuck Hagel as Barack Obama's running mate.
I think
Chuck Hagel has the ability to reach out to moderate and moderate Republicans and suburbanites.
Mm-hmm.
He has a chance to bring votes from that sector and make up for the loss of the blue-collar Democratic voters who I don't think are going to go to Obama.
Well,
I think he's the counterpoint to the Reagan Democrats.
How would the dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, like you described yourself, how would they respond to a Chuck Hagel?
I think a lot of Democrats respect Hagel because he was one of the first Republican voices to say, hey, wait a minute, what are we doing in Iraq? And to really, you know, I think he was one of the first chinks in the armor to say, wait a minute, we're not getting told the truth here. And we're not going to send men to die unless we have the truth. And I think Hegel has the reputation, staunch Republican, pretty conservative, but he will break with party orthodoxy, and I think is a truth teller. And he certainly was on the war.
I think he would absolutely be a stake to the heart of John McCain, because he also was one of John McCain's friends.
Right, but he reminds me
McCain. They were up until the campaign financing reform
fight. Doesn't he remind you of John McCain in 2000?
But still, I mean, there's a lot of similarity between
that. Yeah,
he does,
actually. That's a good analogy.
That would be a real, in my view, that's a political gotcha. If you pull someone who's...
I don't think he gets Hegel, but he could get, like, he could hearken back to the Clinton era and pick, like, a Bill Cohen, former Republican senator and former Secretary of Defense.
In Clinton's administration.
Right. But I mean, and hearken back to when, you know, in the Democrats' view, I disagree, but in the Democrats' view, when we had a smart foreign policy, which is dubious.
And anyone on that list that you think is better than the others?
On the list that you just read?
That we're going to do the Republicans in the next time.
Well, Hegel would be the game changer. I agree with you on that, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Let me make a pitch for McCaskill, though. I mean, there's the obvious electoral stuff, but she's an interesting woman. I remember sitting in a room in 1994, and we had a woman who was running for governor from Jackson County named Marcia Murphy, and we were talking through, and the other end of the table was the Jackson County prosecutor. And by the end of the meeting, I said, man, she's the one who should be running for governor. It was Claire McCaskill. And she was a woman, not only a prosecutor, as an auditor, exposed all kinds of scandals, and I think is really tough-minded, fair, and likable. I think she'd be...
And likable.
Yeah,
and
very likable.
And that could certainly push Missouri into the Obama...
You got polls that already show Obama ahead in Missouri.
We have to say farewell in hour number one to PG and Greco, who's been our Democrat, Carol Felsenthal, author of the book, Clinton in Exile, a Republican, is Dan Propp. We're going to be back for another full hour at 1-800-723-8289 with your calls. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, back in about 10 minutes. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red!
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway this evening with our comment from Democrat Peter Giangreco, Republican Dan Proft, and author Carol Felsenthal, author of the book Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's btbtalk@AOL.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. We've been talking about this past hour, we're talking primarily about who might be the running mate with Barack Obama for Vice President of the United States. That's one of the next major decisions that the candidates have got to make. And I want to spend a little time talking about what John McCain might do. We briefly alluded to the lieutenant or the Louisiana governor, Bobby Jindal, the newly elected governor of Louisiana, very young man, very conservative, very articulate, was on some of the Sunday morning shows today. I think most people probably around the table would think that it's probably a little too early for Jindal, given his age and the fact that when you're running with a guy who's 72 years old, you might want to have a little more experience in addition to youth
Bruce,
on your side.
Bruce, he's only 71.
Okay, 71, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yes, very charitable of you.
But he looks 72.
71
because
is
because he was
the new
a prisoner
45.
Of war. But
so Jindal
was in Congress before he became governor.
Right.
And very impressive. I mean, I think he'd be an interesting choice, and I think he'd bring a whole new constituency.
An Indian,
right?
Where is the Indian vote? Are the Indians? Don't they tend to vote
Democrat?
I thought they were more Republican than Democratic.
No, I think they. I think the split. I think they tend to, as an ethnicity, they tend to be more Democrat.
In
Democrat.
Virginia, they went for the.
It depends in different places. I mean, obviously in Chicago they're pretty Democratic,
right.
But in Virginia they're more of a swing vote. And I think Warner really courted a lot of the different Asian communities in Northern Virginia, and Kane has done the same, and so it's part of one of the rituals of Virginia politics now.
And he's also a Catholic, which I think would be and bring something interesting to the table. And I don't know this, but I suspect he's anti-choice, anti-abortion.
We call that pro-life. Yes.
Pro-life.
Yes.
Sorry.
Pro-life.
Right. Yes.
He is pro-life.
Right.
Yes. By the way, one of the other things that Carl Rove was talking about. He has, on his personal shortlist that he's shared with everybody via Fox, and that's Mitt Romney, who is someone who I came out and supported a long time ago, that I think in the wake of the campaign being over, for the simple reason that he's vetted, he could talk about the economy, which is not the strength of John McCain. And conceivably, if you put him and you let him work the state of Michigan, maybe he can deliver a state for you.
And he exudes good looks and energy and competence. I think he's an interesting choice, but the fact that he is a practicing Mormon hurt him before, and I think
number one, McCain is in a statistical dead heat with Obama in Michigan right now. So I think McCain has a message for Michigan that could have that state in play, just like the Democrats think some traditionally red states like Virginia will be in play. Secondly, I don't think, you know, I know there's a lot made of Romney's Mormonism, but I think he was rejected in the Republican primary, not because of his Mormonism, but because people did not believe his 11th hour conversions on so many issues. Mm. I mean, that was the fundamental problem with Romney. And I don't think that's really substantially changed.
Right, and that would actually amplify one of McCain's weaknesses, which is that McCain used to oppose the Republican plank on abortion, which says, the Republican Party believes that abortion should be legal in all circumstances, including rape and incest. Now, McCain has flip-flopped on that because to sort of curry favor with the conservative side of his party. Mitt Romney essentially did the same thing. He was pro-choice when he ran against Ted Kennedy. Now he's pro-life. You don't want to. I think the McCain folks would have a problem amplifying that. Not only is he sort of political, sort of, flip-flopping all over the place, but this sort of reinforcing this notion that, you know, McCain is kind of tied to some old ways of thinking, some old things in the Republican Party platform that, you know, maybe a lot of younger voters don't agree with.
I think the Republican Party also needs to project, and I mean, needs to define a constituency and also needs to project exactly who they are in this cycle and going forward into the future. And to project a very corporatist image for the party, I think, is a mistake. And I think that's what Romney projects, and I think that's one of the things that got rejected.
But also entrepreneurial, and
that's not what he projects. He projects kind of a Fortune 500 CEO, and
right.
And I would like if we had an entrepreneur, some guy who maybe was a billionaire as well, but had kind of built the latest greatest widget and had created all this wealth and jobs, somebody like that, and there are those persons out there would be an interesting choice.
I think that's exactly right. I don't think you want Mitt Romney trying to win the argument of, are you for McCain's corporate tax cuts or Obama's middle class tax cuts? He's not a good face to argue difference.
What about Huckabee? What about Mike Huckabee?
Oh, I don't know. I think he took himself out when he made that terrible joke about Obama when there was an explosion and he said Obama's jumping off the chair because someone pointed a gun at him. I think Mitt Romney, there's something synthetic and inauthentic about him, and that's true. And I think that is a reason not to select him. But McCain, for all this flip-flopping, has a great deal of authenticity. It's interesting because as you pointed out, where he did change positions, and the McCain of 2000 is nothing like the McCain, or very little like the McCain of 2008.
Right.
But there's a deep authenticity about him that comes with his military experience.
Well, again, what does it do for solidifying a voting bloc, and what voting bloc is brought to the party, if any, by Mike Huckabee?
Well, I'm going to pull a Joe Biden, and I'm going to plagiarize Bruce Dumont's
argument.
Thank
you very much.
In this, because
which case were you going to make?
Because
I've made the case for Mitt Romney, and I've made the case.
Well, not for Mitt Romney.
For Mike Huckabee.
But you have. I'm not a huge fan of Mike Huckabee, particularly on economic issues, because I think he is a Democrat. He's an economic populist who believes in failed protectionist policies and other economic policies that are just at odds with creating wealth and growth in this country, which is where we need to go. But your argument is very intriguing to me, which is that Huckabee doing his Gomer Pyle routine in Arkansas and Tennessee, very skilled politician, keep him south of the Mason-Dixon line and lock up those southern swing states, and leave McCain up in the industrial Midwest and some of those swing states like Ohio and Pennsylvania to be McCain, the maverick independent. I think that ham and egg routine actually could be very compelling, and Huckabee does have a connect to the evangelical community to bring those voters out, and that might be the best asset that any vice presidential candidate for McCain could have.
Well, what do you think of that analysis, that brilliant analysis
of me regurgitating?
It was very
brilliant.
It was Dumont-esque.
It was wonderful. And what do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know really what Mike Huckabee brings to the ticket other than some, sort of affability. I think
bringing likability to a ticket's not bad.
I said affable. Well, he's just sort of, he's the guy who cracks a good joke from time to time. I don't know if you look at him and say, okay, I'm okay. I'm okay if something happens to McCain that this guy's it. There's something about him that's just sort of, there's like I'm missing something and I can't put my finger on it. Likeable guy, decent governor, but there's just
we're going to talk about it when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. Any other names you want to throw under the list, either Republicans or Democrats running with Barack Obama or John McCain? 1-800-723-8289. From Chicago, live, I'm Bruce Dumont.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country.
but there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From the Pennsylvania Turnpike to 405 in California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Let's head to Scott, who's driving in Indiana, listening to us on XM Radio. POTUS 130, go ahead, you're on the air, Scott.
Hey, I hear so many people talking about presidential candidates, and it's less important to me about what a person can, what a candidate can bring as far as demographics or you know, electoral votes goes, and what's more important to me is how fit they are to be president should the worst occur.
Yeah.
And not just should the worst occur, but in 8 years, how electable is this vice president going to be? And I would just like comments about that. And I'm from Missouri, and when somebody mentioned Claire McCaskill, I thought, oh, brother, I voted for her. I really like her, but I don't think she's ready to be president.
How come?
And,
how come?
That's important to me.
Just in your view, just be too young?
Well,
not experienced enough?
I would say the experience plays into it, and she's kind of matronly, and I don't know if that's a very astute observation, but through the campaign, the Senate campaign, there was some dirty laundry that came out about some of her business practices and that sort of thing, and I just don't get the impression that she wants to be president, and that's important to me when I think of who I may vote for as president is going to choose to be his or her successor.
Okay.
So how many of the names that you're throwing out there actually want to be president? When you say Biden, I think there's a guy.
Every single one of them.
Yeah, that's the right answer. If they have senator in front of their name, they get up every morning and they look in the mirror and they see a president.
Right. You know, but Harry Truman didn't want to be president particularly. Yeah. And he turned out to be, you know, by most accounts, a very effective president.
Well, I think, I mean, frankly, like the, what we ended before the last break talking about Huckabee, he's an affable guy, he's a decent governor. Sounds like what a lot of people were saying about Bill Clinton 16 years ago. Right. I mean, I think one of the truisms of politics is that nobody is ready to be president.
Very true.
And so I mean, I think you always have a hard time projecting somebody that maybe you don't know very well and you're still learning about into the presidency, and whoever it is has to grow into that position, but because there is no real training.
Is Tim Pawlenty the governor of Minnesota? Tell us about him, in your view. Where does he stand within the Republican Party and the conservative wing of the party?
He's center right. I mean, he's a more moderate. You know, Minnesota's a strange state.
Did you notice how Dan said moderate as if it was like a swear word?
No.
I wish we'd seen it on TV because he kind of squinted his eyes and he almost held his nose.
We are all an 80% party. You agree with us 80% of the time, then you're a Republican. That's how it's got to be for us to be successful. So I'm not ready to exorcise moderates or people who disagree with me on this or that. I think Pawlenty's an interesting choice, but again, I just don't know what he brings to the ticket. And I think he would tend to reinforce some of the negatives with McCain within the base, whereas like a Huckabee might shore up some of those negatives.
What about Charlie Crist?
He seems like a real lightweight to me.
McCain's going to win Florida in a walk.
Just the way he presents himself. But you know what I was thinking as we were talking is... does a vice president pick have to be an attack dog? Does it have to be like to take the extreme, the Spiro Agnew, who had nothing else to contribute other than the attack dog mode with the help of Bill Safire? But would Huckabee be able to fill that role? Would he be able to take on? But
people forget about Huckabee. I mean, who ran the best? I mean, McCain, because he was left for dead, I mean, ultimately ran the best campaign. But I think McCain was the beneficiary of all the other candidates being measured by Republican primary voters and found wanting. Right. And so they went with Republican primary voters, by and large, or the plurality, went with somebody they know. Huckabee ran the best campaign. He was by far the most skilled politician.
Even after he dropped out, he was still getting votes.
The best campaign with the least amount of money.
Right. And, you know, the old adage is the best attack dog is somebody who can come and step on your foot, break your toes, but not harm the shine on your shoes. And I think Huckabee be pretty good at that sort of aw shucks and then stick it to you in the back.
And some of the other names, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Mark Sanford of South Carolina. It seems to me you're going to have South Carolina anyway. Joe Lieberman, is he a serious candidate?
Well, Lindsey Graham is very close to John McCain. I mean, it seems like they're best friends.
Secretary of Defense.
I think that Joe Lieberman might be able to get out of the kind of mess that he's in the Senate by being a member of John McCain's cabinet, where John McCain's
I think that's a real possibility. But I think the caller kind of re-racked this thing in the right kind of way.
Right.
The way these things tend to get decided is different from the way we usually talk about them. You know, that pundits talk about them in this state and that state and this base. And that's all part of the calculation. But number one is, can they pass a vet? Okay. Can they pass, if Carol wrote a book about them, would they pass it? Second, you know, would they be up to the job? Third, really, is this somebody I like and I want to spend 8 years in the White House with?
There was Kerry
Not a
Edwards
big deal. Yeah, there was. There
they,
was.
They didn't seem to like each other.
There yeah. Was, so, I mean, there, you know, and then you get to, what state does he bring? What part of my base? What part of the other party does he bring? That's like almost a third or fourth.
A name that I keep coming back to me because I think he was vetted. I think he fits an image. And the name was mentioned earlier. And I think he can bring you a state. And I think that's Tom Ridge. Tom Ridge is not a kid. I think he's about 60 years old himself.
So yeah, but he looks good. He's got a hearing problem.
He does.
He does. He does.
But then he could.
And he's got the military.
He could bring you a state. I think he could bring you a state.
He amplifies the biography too. You know, this sort of notion, and I think that's, you know, everybody gets caught up in the old style geography. You know, when Bill Clinton picked Al Gore, it was all about amplifying the brand, which was young, fresh, change. We're going to do things different. A couple of moderate Democrats from the South. It was he accentuated what Bill Clinton. It wasn't about putting Tennessee in play, or St. Albans for that matter.
And actually, I think Lindsey Graham is the best fit for that approach because mm-hmm. Lindsey Graham is an independent thinker, but he also has enough conservative credentials that I think most conservatives would, he would pass the base test, so to speak. I think Lindsey Graham would be a very interesting choice.
Let's go to David in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. You're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, Bruce. How are you doing today?
Okay.
I just wanted to comment. I was able to attend the Republican State Convention here in Texas. We had it in Houston just this past weekend. I was there on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And I sat in a press conference with Mitt Romney for about 20 minutes. And he made it very clear that he had absolutely no expectation of being vice president. His quote was he's not expecting to be McCain's running mate or a member of his team, but he is looking forward to supporting him and will do what it takes to help get him elected.
Well, that is the script of which everyone who wants to be vice president reads from.
The same script.
Yeah.
That was a prepared statement.
Yeah, that,
right, but he might want to.
Yeah, this is one of those jobs you don't get if you want it.
He might be looking to 2012 and just laying the groundwork now. Can't you imagine him doing that if Barack wins and running 4 years from now?
No, but again, if you're a Republican candidate for vice president and you're running now, I don't think that hurts you in 4 years,
no,
whether you're running as an incumbent vice president or you're running
But you don't think that John McCain likes Mitt Romney much. I think those
no,
two.
No, but I don't think it's necessarily about likability. I think if the experts came in and said, listen, you don't like this guy. I mean,
right. Kennedy Johnson.
Kennedy Johnson was far more there was far more vitriol in
right.
between those two than there is between John McCain and
that's true.
I mean, and even George Bush and Ronald Reagan. I mean, Romney, you know, the use of when Bush referred to Reagan's policy as voodoo economics, it didn't hurt him. I think the comparison talking about Reagan picking Bush is more viable today than the Kennedy Johnson illusion. And I would say that in that particular case, I think if somebody went to John McCain and said, listen, we know you don't like this guy. You know, likability was not high on his record. But listen, he can help you here, here, and here. And, oh, by the way, he's been vetted, and he's got $380 million.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy. I think he could swallow hard and take him.
I have to agree with you guys as well. With regards to Huckabee, he being in the audience and just hearing him, he's funny. He's a funny guy, likable, and he made brought the laughs out of the crowd for sure.
Yep, no, I think that's true. Here's somebody that's going to send Peachy and Greco right off the deep end. You have a choice, Rich, calling from Salinas, California, listening to us on KION. Go ahead.
Yeah, I will. I don't know if you guys will not like my choices, but I think we ought to have Zell Miller running as the vice president for John McCain. That way he can stick it to the Democrats again. He's the old Kennedy-style Democrat. And I think the perfect person for Barack Obama would be his mentor. Give him a second chance, Jimmy Carter. That way we can all cut back on our driving, cut back our thermometers, or our thermostats, and cut back on eating and solve the weight problem of the United States.
Well, I mean, Zell Miller, if you want to go accentuate the past, and I mean the way, way past, which I don't think John McCain really wants to do, you'd pick Zell Miller in a heartbeat. I mean, that would be the rerun of reruns of rerun ticket.
Yeah, I don't think McCain is vociferous enough by himself. I don't think he needs Zell Miller's volume added to it.
He doesn't need Zell Miller.
No,
to
but I like I like the Jimmy Carter. You know, bring the experience to the table. I like that. That's good. That'd be. I mean, I like that as a Republican.
What about Al Gore? I keep hearing his name raised as a possible VP for.
I think
he's already
Barack
had that
Obama,
job.
And he's already, you know, been there, done that.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the one issue that, you know, Al Gore's one issue is becoming less and less a part of the discussion from the Democrats. I think Obama, in his seminal speech on economics, mentioned it once. Very interesting.
Well, it is the dominant issue of our time. I wouldn't say it's, you know, I'd say $4 gas prices.
Is it because of McCain's
20 years ago
on some of the environmental issues?
No, it's because he doesn't want to talk about emissions taxes when gas is $4 a gallon. That's why.
1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, talking politics from Chicago, coast to coast and border to border every Sunday night. Back with more calls when we continue. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Knoxville, Tennessee to Trenton, New Jersey, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289 on some of America's great radio stations from coast to coast, and also every Sunday night on XM Radio, POTUS 130. If you want to know what's happening politically in this campaign, the 24 hours a day, XM Radio's got it. POTUS is the place, 130, and they're our home, our satellite radio home, every Sunday night from coast to coast and border to border and around the globe. Also joining us this evening is Dan Proft. He is our card-carrying conservative Republican. He's a commentator on WLS Radio, our flagship station. PGN Greco also joins us. He is the partner in the Strategy Group. That's one of the leading media, Democratic media companies in the United States. Does a lot of the direct mail for the Obama campaign. So if you're getting things shoved in your mailboxes, if not now, you certainly will be November. Much of that has been created by the Strategy Group out of Chicago. And also with us this evening is Carol Felsenthal. She is author of the book Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House, talking about the role of Bill Clinton since he left the White House and how a husband can be an albatross around the neck of a would-be president. Let's talk about the wives of John McCain and Barack Obama. How likely are they going to be pivotal characters in this campaign between now and November? Carol?
I think that both Cindy McCain and Michelle Obama will be more negatives than positives for their husbands. In Cindy McCain's case, it's because she's the the second wife. There's a story about John McCain's first wife, which is getting more play lately. And her financial situation is quite complex. She's a very wealthy woman. She inherited a beer distributorship from her father. So you have that part. I'm sure that the Obama people are going to look very carefully at who she has business relationships with. In the case of Michelle Obama, I think there is a lot of opposition research going on as we speak about Michelle Obama. There are a lot of rumors out there. In fact, one of the interesting things that came up in the news over the weekend was this website, or at the end of last week, that Barack Obama and his people have established to deal with rumors. Well, I understand that there's an anti-Obama group that has a website that's very close, a website address that's very close to the rumor bashing site, so there'll be some confusion between the two of them. But some of those rumors are connected to Michelle Obama and some of the right-wing talk radio hosts like Rush Limbaugh are out there.
What is in a campaign, I want to get reaction from our Republican and Democrat. In a campaign, what's fair and what's unfair when you're talking about the candidate's wife, Dan Proft?
Well, I mean,
fair?
Well, I don't know about all fair. All is pretty encompassing. I think to the extent that a spouse is a surrogate and is seen a la as Hillary Clinton was, as Nancy Reagan was, as part of a inner circle of advisors, then I think it's fair to vet the views and input that person is giving. And so when Michelle Obama made her comment that generated so much controversy about, you know, essentially this is, I'm for the first time in my adult life, I'm proud of our country because of Barack's ascension politically, you know, I think that's fair to attach scrutiny to that and to call that into question and to make her explain exactly what she means. And I would say the same thing if Cindy McCain said similar statements. So to the extent that they interject themselves or they are interjected into the process and they are seen as somebody who's an important advisor on policy and politics, I think that they have to be part of the vetting process, part of the discussion, because, I mean, they're going to be somebody that influences their spouse if they were to become president.
Eugene Greco.
I think Laura Bush had it right, where she thought that all the scrutiny of Michelle Obama has been very unfair. A lot of it generated by the Republican Party. The Tennessee Republican Party went to the ridiculous length of even creating an attack TV ad where you attack Michelle Obama. I mean, come on. Barack Obama, John McCain, they're the ones running for president. We ought to have a fair airing of what they say, what their views are. I think most Americans are interested in where they're going to take the country and not a lot of back, you know, made up stories. And there are a lot of them about Michelle that there were flat out lies that were coming out of Rush Limbaugh's mouth and ricocheting around right wing internet sites. And I was glad to see Laura Bush call, you know, kind of say, you know what, that's not fair. And I think she's got it about right.
What about being a key advisor to a candidate, though? I mean, isn't that fair game? I mean,
well, look,
isn't a wife or a spouse generally the key advisor to whether they're running for president or not?
I think in any healthy marriage, your spouse is your greatest confidant.
Yeah.
I don't think that means that they're fair game to run TV ads about and to attack the way that some of the more misguided Republicans.
Well,
have been.
I'm not
accusing the McCain campaign.
No, I know.
This was just some, you know, some loony right wingers in this Tennessee Republican Party, which is a history of doing stuff like this around race baiting and other things.
I agree with your point to an extent, though. But I mean, but now with the experience and knowing what we know now, I mean, when Hillary Clinton was elected and Hillary is you know the point person on healthcare, quote unquote, reform. I mean, that's somebody that, okay, well,
that's a different case, though.
No. But I'm saying, but we don't know.
Yeah, Laura Bush doesn't play that role.
No,
I don't think Michelle Obama will play
and
that role.
And I don't think Sidney McCain will, for sure, because
exactly.
Basically.
But I mean, those are questions that need to be asked and answered, is my point.
Well, Sidney McCain basically reacted to what Michelle said. She didn't come up with anything new on the stump. But, you know, this website I mentioned, the rumor bashing website, has a facsimile of Barack's birth certificate on it. It's really a very interesting site to go to. Also, there's a storyline emerging in this campaign, and that is of Barack as a weakling, as a wuss, sometimes he's called, or somebody called him a sissy boy, which kind of had legs, and you hear that more and more. And Michelle, nobody would ever watch Michelle or read about Michelle or think about Michelle without thinking this is one very strong woman. So you have a kind of a contrast. And you have Barack, who's a very cool customer. That's how his persona is cool. Michelle Obama's persona is much hotter and more angry seeming.
Let's go to John listening to us on the Indiana Turnpike on POTUS 130 on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I grew up in the same town as Chuck Hagel, and I've contacted him several times. He never calls back. I always want to know if he was a conservative Republican, why is Ben Nelson more of a Republican than him? You can't trust him. He's not honest with the people who elected him, and he's not honest with the people that support him, and I don't know. Maybe he'd be good for Obama. That way Obama would be away because he'd never be able to trust him.
All right. That's a voice from back home. Not a fan, obviously. Let's go to East Texas. Kendall also listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead, Kendall. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. That's a tough one to follow up on. Hey, going back to the VP talk that we were talking about earlier, what is Joe Biden's role going to be if Obama's elected? It sure seems like he'll have some role in that administration, and I think he'd be a great VP candidate.
I think he'll be secretary. I think he would be, could be Obama's choice to be Secretary of State. Probably Secretary of State, and then Susan Rice as the National Security
Advisor. There's probably a battle going on between Chris Dodd and Joe Biden, because they both could be.
I mean, Bill Richardson.
I think between Chris Dodd. I think he'd like to be Secretary of State, too.
Yeah, I don't. I would think of Chris Dodd in another cabinet position, but I think Chris Dodd is going to get an awful lot of flack over something I've mentioned a few times tonight, and that's the special term mortgage that he and his wife got. So I don't know. Chris Dodd, I don't see Chris Dodd as Secretary of State. Maybe some other cabinet position, but not that one.
I think Biden. I think. Handled himself well during the campaign as well. Let's go. Knoxville, Tennessee is the place. WNOX is the station. Harry, the caller, go ahead.
Hey, how are y'all?
Okay.
Well, I have a question, and this for the Republicans mainly, is, you know, what guidelines are they using to elect to choose a vice president? If it's just for the votes, then it may potentially hurt McCain in the future, because McCain mentioned before, and maybe this is not news, but about his economic weakness and economy. I mean, Mitt Romney would be great because, from what I hear, he has good economic credentials. And that may actually help him, because at the present time, I think economy is one of the biggest problems we have, besides the fact that this whole thing about Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran, if we can clear the economy up, it would help the country a lot, especially with the weak dollar. So I think, you know, based on that, Romney would be better. If you just count on getting the votes, if that's the politician's view, that may be a wrong measure in the long run and for the country itself.
Well, but
I'll hang up. Thank you.
Well, but, you know, I mean, I think, you know, Romney's record, frankly, when he was governor of Massachusetts on market-oriented economic policies is mixed. So, you know, he is not coming in as an entrepreneurial kind of Steve Forbes-esque, growth class type of Republican. It's very much more of a top-down view of the world. He's not a supply-side guy. He's not a free market guy per se. So I don't know that he brings, again, that much more credential to McCain. Now, I agree. Look, I've got my own issues with McCain and have for a long time. So McCain has made some silly statements. He's taken some silly positions on economic policies. But as a Republican and as Americans interested in the best possible choice in this campaign, we have to be willing to let people reform themselves and come back to sensible economic policies. And I think that's what John McCain has begun to do since he was the nominee.
All right, 1-800-723-8029. Lots of callers on the line taking America's political polls from coast to coast and border to border. We're looking for choices for running mate tonight. 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Texarkana, Texas to Muncie, Indiana, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Let's go to Muncie. David is listening to us on WoWo. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just curious. I knew someone in New Mexico who's Latino, and I was surprised to find out that he wasn't interested in McCain because he thought that all Republicans were had sort of an anti-immigrant sentiment. And when I told him about McCain's role in the McCain-Kennedy legislation, I sort of suggested that if Republicans always sort of who stick their neck out on this issue always get it cut off, then this will there won't be any bipartisan movement on it. Is there any candidate that McCain could nominate for the vice presidency who might be Latino and socially conservative, maybe a Catholic former military or something? And if he did that, would it alienate the Republican base too much?
Well, I mean, one possible Latino choice would be Mel Martinez. But frankly, Lindsey Graham, going back to that name that we were talking about earlier, was somebody who shared McCain's position of basically we need to be sensible about immigration reform. There needs to be a path to citizenship. We're not going to be the Tancredo party. And I think that actually is the right note to strike.
The only problem with that is John McCain has said publicly now he wouldn't vote for his own bill. So again, here's another case, as with abortion, where he's now now for banning all abortion, even in case of rape and incest, to as a to fawn to the conservative right during his primary, and you know, used to vote against Bush's tax cuts for the wealthy. Now he's for him. Sure. This is another case where he's thrown his own bill that he wrote over the side and said he wouldn't even vote for it anymore. I mean, this is the John McCain. Carol made a point. Carol made a point, which was the John McCain of 2000, who was the independent maverick, is not the John McCain of 2008.
Sure. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I personally don't see him as flip-flopping on that issue, because he has said that the reason he's changed his position is because people don't have confidence that you wouldn't have the same result that you had as, say, from Reagan's amnesty, because it wouldn't actually be effective if we couldn't limit further immigration, and that's why he's now...
It's going to be one of those issues that's not going to get a lot of...
No, because there's not going to be a lot of distinction between the two of them.
If you didn't get traction for that in the Republican primary, which that issue did not get a lot of traction, it's not going to come up. It's not going to be a big issue. It may be a big issue with some talk show hosts, but it's not going to be an issue for the body politic. I do want to ask one question about one of Obama's points when he said that he would be willing to meet with some of the dictators around the world without condition. It was early in the campaign. It was one of the points that he basically had to play defense on, because it was a point where Hillary Clinton went after him. It seems to me that one of the things in this campaign that McCain has sort of paid gotcha with Obama, and that is when he said, how are you going to pull the troops out of Iraq when you won't even go to Iraq to see firsthand the program that you want to pull the plug on? It seems to me that he has forced Obama into going to Iraq.
Well,
because
you
won't even meet with General Petraeus. He's the guy you want to basically pull the rug out from under, and you won't even meet with a guy. I think that puts him in sort of a defenseless position, I think.
Well, I mean, Barack Obama's been to Iraq before. I mean, to imply that he's not wouldn't square with the facts. I think, look, John McCain's belief that, he had that trip to Iraq where he had a couple of hundred Marines around him and two Black Hawk helicopters in the sky and said, oh, you can walk around Iraq
in the market.
It was kind of a stunt, and I think this is a stunt too. Look, in the end, here's where John McCain is on Iraq. He wants at least five more years of combat. And then he said he'd be fine with 50 or 100 more years of occupation.
We have in other places.
Like we have in Korea.
It was really unfair.
But he's very clear on five more years, at least five more years of combat.
When did he say that?
He came out about 3 weeks, maybe a month ago, where he said, I'll have the troops out by 2013. Well, that's five more years. That'll be twice as long as we were in World War II.
But that's a classic mischaracterization. You're saying he has said, I want five more years of combat, when in fact he said, my goal is to have the troops out by 2013, something Obama wouldn't even commit to in the Democratic debate.
No, that's not true.
It
he
is
has
true.
A plan to get out in 16 months.
When all the candidates were asked, would you guarantee that there'll be no troops in Iraq by 2013, what did he answer?
The question was what if there are, he gave a few hypotheticals. It was not that clear a question. You're making it sound like he completely disavowed. No, he has a position. We'll start in the first month. We think we can bring him home a brigade a month. 16 months, as you can replace him with the Iraq position, frankly a mainstream position held by most of the U.S.
We're going to Internet 80. Internet 80, John is listening to us on XM Radio. Where are you in Interstate 80, John? What state are you in?
I'm about to enter 287.
What state?
New Jersey,
very good. What's your question? You've got another name to throw in the hopper.
Yeah, I do. Actually, I have two names. The candidate for Barack Obama. How about Sam Nunn from Georgia. Mm-hmm.
That name came up a little bit early. Most people thought that he might be a little too long in the tooth, perhaps.
And too long out of politics, too long out of public life.
Okay.
Give another name.
And for McCain, governor of Alaska. I don't know her name, but I heard her name.
Sarah Palin. I'm going to give you another name. How about David Boren of Oklahoma? President of the University of Oklahoma.
His son has come out and said that he won't support Barack Obama. He's right. In Congress. I was just thinking about...
Well, then that's it.
He'd have to...
Show him the son. Yeah. On that note, we are out of time. Our thanks this evening to Carol Felsenthal. She is author of the book, Clinton in Exile, a president out of the office of a Republican. Tonight has been Dan Proft. Our Democrat has been Peachy and Greco. Guys, thanks very much. Carol, nice to thank you as well. This program is a Jenny B. production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Stephanie Lecce for their assistance in the production of this program. And again, as we said at the very beginning of the program, our condolences go out to the family of Tim Russert, having left us way too soon. One of America's great journalists and someone who loved to talk politics each and every Sunday, as do I and the people that listen to this program. Until next week, I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to SCORE.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit SCORE.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.